Welcome back to Quiver the Green Arrow podcast. This is our 19th episode of season 2 for the episode Man Under the Hood. I am one of your hosts, Michael Cohen.
And I'm your other host, Amanda Konkin.
And we're back. It's been a break. We had a little bit of a break.
One day.
Amanda asked if I wanted to do a mailbag episode over the break, and I was like, no. And we will do another mailbag episode probably after the season.
But it's so nice
over.
To have a week off.
But yeah, especially heading into the season finale, and it synced up really nicely because my other podcast, Frontlines, the Clone Wars podcast, which we're in kind of a bit of, it could have been a very marathon situation of going, because all of the episodes of season 6 came out all at once.
Oh,
there's only 13 episodes, but that's 13 podcasts.
Oh yeah.
Right.
So, that's just like...
so when I looked at it, I said to Matt, my co-host, okay, I'm going to do this so that we do like a, cause Clone Wars goes in arcs. Like it'll like a 4-episode arc and then a 2-episode arc and then a 3-episode arc and then a 4-episode arc. So I said to him, okay, the way we're going to do this is we'll go straight through an arc, then we're going to take a break. Then we'll come back and we'll do an episode of the Rebels podcast, which is my other Star Wars podcast.
Star Wars!
And then we'll come back and we'll do the next arc and we'll take a break. So that break synced up and completely unintentionally because this was scheduled back at the beginning of, I don't know, when was that even released? The beginning of March? So like I did that schedule like a month ago, not knowing that there was going to be a break for Arrow. But it synced up, and I was like, no, I have a break from Frontlines. If I can have a break from Quiver, too, that means that I have a week where I have no responsibilities, and that would be awesome, right? It's the same reason why we take most of the summer off, because...
Yeah, it's kind of nice to,
yeah,
like,
I
have to come all the way up to Burnaby.
Yes, and I have to cut the podcast, and we have to maintain things.
So, we appreciate you guys giving us a week off.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. Someone obviously posted on Stephen Amell's Facebook wall a bunch of stuff, but like, why do you have a week off? Blah, blah. And he did this interesting post where he was like, guys, I'm an actor on the show. I have nothing to do with the hiatus. And it was like great that he's become this sort of beacon of the show in such a way that people feel inclined to talk to him about this.
He's made himself very visible, right? Yeah. So I think for a lot of people that means that like he's the suggestion box. He's put a sign on himself that says suggestion box. And he's like, whoa. Stephen Amell suggestion box. Not Arrow suggestion box. So, you know, there are other people who make these decisions. I don't even think it's the producers that really make the decisions as much as it is the network, right?
Network. So,
what they did, and to be transparent, we got this break specifically so that they could push the season finale into sweeps week. Right, so it's in the last three episodes will fall somewhere in May sweeps, and that is the most important thing for a season finale. It's like Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Go Google sweeps week if you don't know.
Yeah, go Google it. But this is a brief thing. So Google, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Andy Samberg's awesome hit show, Emmy award-winning, critically acclaimed, such a good show. If you're not watching it's so good. Their season finale was like a month, maybe a month and a half ago, and nobody noticed, and it wasn't a big deal, and it was kind of a whimper of a season finale. And I mean, it wasn't designed to be a big cliffhanger season finale. But
it just sort of went away.
But it just kind of happened and nobody really noticed because it happened in the middle of like February or March.
Yeah.
Right? But all of the shows that end in May will have big publicized sweeps week season finales. They'll have TV guide covers. They'll have, you know,
all the stuff,
previews in different magazines and on Entertainment Weekly and, you know, all of these different...
Those are one of my favorite episodes, the Entertainment Weekly, when it has, like, all the different shows as different, like, covers. It's great.
Yeah, so, so Arrow is positioning itself for that. That's why we got the break this time.
Yeah.
So that's a network decision, because the network wants to have that so that they can go into upfronts and say... highest rated show, right? Yeah. And say, look how great our numbers were for Arrow. Everybody tuned in on the night so that they can say at upfronts to their advertisers, we got a whole new season of Arrow planned for next year. Which, I mean, we've already gotten confirmation that, Arrow is coming back. Yeah. But
it makes it worth more money. So basically, everybody should be happy that we got a week off because it makes Arrow more of a big player.
If it makes CW money, it means that they'll keep making Arrow, which means that we can keep doing Quiver, which means that everybody can keep listening, enjoying, and consuming, and everybody will be happy, and we'll forget that the planet is slowly increasing in temperature in certain areas and decreasing in other areas, and the ice caps are melting. So,
you know.
Ours is not to question why. Yeah. Anyways, we have emails.
We have so many emails. I knew we should have done a mailbag episode, Mike. I feel bad now that we didn't do a mailbag over there.
Well, if everybody goes and votes for Geek Girls of Vancouver
On Starry Hive, storyhive.com. Thank you, people that have gone there. But we're still vying to produce the documentary Geek Girls of Vancouver on storyhive.com.
Release on Saturday, voting ends Sunday. So that means that when you are listening to this, if you are listening to this before Sunday, you need to go on and you need to vote for Geek Girls of Vancouver. Because if it gets funded, and only if it gets funded, okay? This isn't like, oh, we're just going to do it anyways. If it gets funded, we're going to do a special episode dedicated to the women of the DC universe. So, I'm hoping that we can get maybe some other ladies in here to talk about comics.
Yeah.
And I'll be on the episode, but I'm really hoping that I can sit back and just listen and not be a part of it. And we can just have, because so far, all of our guest hosts have been dudes. Yeah. And so I feel like, you know, this is an opportunity, but they got to earn it.
Yeah.
Our listeners have to earn it. So.
And there's, I mean, it's really great. It would really support you. And you really don't, I think you have to, like, give them your email address or something.
Yeah. It takes a second. Yeah. So it is important. Like, you be patient. You know, you got to sign up for a thing and then you got to vote and you have 10 votes.
Yeah.
But you can only use five of them for Geek Girls of Vancouver.
Yeah.
And then you're expected to use those other five votes to vote on other things that you like.
Maybe you want to,
You don't have to. Yeah. And we're not telling you specifically not to vote for anything. Yeah. But, you know.
But you can. I mean, you can check out other stuff. And it's
You can.
I like to be a good
But I didn't vote for anything else. Because I didn't want my votes to go to other things.
My grandma didn't either. She specifically messaged me and said. Anyways. But it would be really cool if I got your support. And it would just mean that we get to produce a really great documentary highlighting some awesome women in this city. And I don't know if people watch, like, Standard Action as a web series.
Which they should totally check out.
That Joanna Gaskell has created and writes and stars in. It's sort of like role-playing D&D.
It's essentially a D&D session, but without the players.
Yeah,
like you're just watching what happens, and it's comedic.
Yeah,
like it's very
comedic. And I don't know if
it's a really good series.
Listen to Kieran Strange. She's a pop sort of alternative pop geeky artist. So we are also going to hopefully feature her. So just some really cool people in Vancouver.
And as I had to tell Amanda, somebody needs to interview her for her documentary because she's the host of a very popular Vancouver-based podcast.
Well, someone did interview me today about the documentary, so it was good. So hopefully, anyways, it'd be awesome. I know everybody's so supportive on this show, anyways. So for Quiver, you guys have already supported a lot of our stuff.
But
so
like, if a fraction of you listeners go and do this, I'm fairly certain that you guys can dominate.
Hopefully, it would be great because
if
so
all
epic.
Of you that are listening to this go and vote, then
because Geek Girls are awesome, and who knows. Maybe after Geek Girls of Vancouver comes Geek Girls of Name Your City. There you go.
Yeah.
It's a franchise opportunity. Anyways.
Okay, let's get into
into the emails. So this is a nice short one. Let's start with short and sweet.
Yeah.
Okay. This is from Adam Nelson. So Adam, thank you for emailing in. And his subject is he has a theory from this week's episode. That's what it says. I have a quick theory from this week's episode. I'm guessing that the reason Slade's eye didn't come back is that the arrow that went through it was treated with the cure Ivo told them about. And that's what Adam says. That's his theory.
I like that theory. That's solid.
I feel as though all he said in this episode that he had the opportunity to cure Slade and chose instead to kill him. I feel as though that was very clear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But what that says to me is that he had the opportunity to shoot an arrow through Slade.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that wouldn't kill him, and he chose instead to shoot him in the face. right? Yeah. Which, yeah. in normal circumstances, you would expect to kill somebody. Yes. So I don't know. I think it's interesting because there was also that little piece about an eye in tonight's episode where Anatoly says you wanted an eye. I think we can get you one, and he was going to pull out Ivo's eye. So
I've just thought about it as you've been talking, and I'm like, hey, maybe that is a good theory.
So I think there's something to it. I think there's something to it.
Yeah, there could. That's interesting. I never thought. Why does Ivo need an eye? I'm curious.
For his experiments.
Ooh, maybe it has to do with the cure and with the cure. This is a good theory, Adam. I'm excited. Now I'm thinking about it. Yay.
Well, I'm glad we could turn you around on that.
My brain is now working in over mode. Man, we talked for like a really long time before we were doing this podcast, and I had to click my brain back into quiver mode. So it's good. Am I reading this next email too?
Go ahead, read the next email. Because the one that I have is a two-pager. It's going to take a little while.
We have a theory where we're not allowed to read two-page emails, so whoever it is, they're really lucky that they... Yeah. It better be a great email.
It's a pretty good email.
Is it? Okay, good. Because this is a nice short and sweet. This is from Steven Rysted. Hopefully I said that right. Okay, it's like slightly longer. We're going in progression of the length of the email. So, Steven says, "Hello, Mike and Amanda. I'm really excited for the next 4 weeks after this episode. I know that Arrow has been compared to Batman in the past, but this episode really reminded me of the last few minutes of The Dark Knight. Every episode, my dad and I sit down and get our fill of nonstop action and Arrow-esque thrill. We both agree that Laurel is our favorite character in this episode. Unlike on other CW shows, when Laurel found out that Ollie is Arrow, she actually spent time researching the possibility of this new revelation. The hug near the end of the episode tugged at my heartstrings. I loved the Flash cameos, and I can't wait to hear your opinions of the episode." So, Steven, we had this conversation too, but in a completely opposite way. While we were talking about the show, I went, "God, they're turning Laurel into Lana," and I was literally.
As well
what I
as
said.
At one point, I said, "Get there faster," because she's been told that he's the Arrow.
Yeah.
That Oliver is the Arrow. That they are one and the same. Oliver is Arrow. Arrow is Oliver. Oliver is Arrow. Arrow is Oliver. Okay? She's been told.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? She doesn't have any reason necessarily to believe Slade. So, yes, I do understand the perspective that she wants to sort of verify.
Yeah.
But the thing that bothered me is that later in the episode, she goes in, she sees Sarah's
scars.
She walks out, and then we get that really weird sequence.
It was four flashes.
Of her like, "Wait a second, Oliver has scars. Wait a second, Slade told me that Oliver is the Arrow. Wait a second, there's a Black Canary character as well. And Sarah also has scars." And it was like, oh my God, Laurel, get there faster. Like, the reference is to Friends.
Yeah.
And the multiple times where something very obvious and shocking happens.
And then
Joey doesn't get it. And he goes, "Wait a second." And Chandler, Chandler says it on three different occasions.
Yeah.
Of get there faster. And then it's like, oh my God. So it's this thing where Slade says this. And Laurel doesn't gain any new information over the course of this episode about Oliver.
Yeah.
Even the stuff that she's pinning up on her, suspense thriller.
Thing.
Yeah, her Unabomber wall. None of that's new information. All of that is rehashed information from last season that Laurel should know for the most part, right?
Mm-hmm.
There might be like a piece in there that like she's uncovered or whatever. But she has all of the information already to put together the fact that Oliver is Arrow. Not to mention the fact that he was flat out arrested and accused of being the vigilante last season.
Yeah.
So, like, they made up for it in this episode when Detective Lance...
That was the one redeeming thing.
...has his monologue, which is one of the best written...
Yeah.
Soliloquies in the series so far because it's funny because again comparing it to Batman, there is a commonly held belief that Jim Gordon knows who Batman is. Mm-hmm. Because how do you not know who Batman is? You're Jim Gordon. You're the police commissioner. Yeah. You've dealt with Batman for years. Yeah. You know Bruce Wayne. You've seen this happen. Like, who else could it possibly be? You've never seen the two of them in the same place at once, except in very conspicuous circumstances where it was, in fact, Superman underneath that
mask. Yeah.
Which works only because comic book heroes are all drawn the same way. there's a widely held belief that Jim Gordon knows that Bruce Wayne and Batman are the same guy. Mm-hmm. But he chooses not to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Right? Because it serves nobody. Mm-hmm. Because as Detective Lance says, like, he needs to be out there, and he needs to be... It's a little bit different, because, like, his speech was really cool. It's like, he can't be a person.
Yeah.
He needs to be something else.
And it totally redeemed, because I was upset for the last two episodes, that I was like, Detective Lance, you can't possibly not know. And then in my brain, I'm like, it's willful, though. He's just so great. He's choosing not to acknowledge it. And it's just brilliant. So, I will say that Laurel facilitating that revelation was great. But I don't know, I disagree. I like that Steven likes Laurel. I like that other people still like Laurel. Yeah,
because I do think that we're bringing a lot of our history with Smallville into
it. Yeah, we have our own and sort of prejudices against, like, the narration of the show and how the show is going in terms of, like, where characters fit. And we have our own preconceived, you know, notions of what that should be. But, like, I found it very CW that it's sort of like, Laurel now knows, and she's going to keep it to herself to save him because she loves him. And anyways, I just totally went like, this is Lana. Anyways, but it was interesting. Yeah. It was good. And
I think the more interesting aspect of that is the relationship between Sarah and Laurel.
Yeah.
I think the much more interesting story is with those characters. And the fact that it focused so much on Oliver and Laurel, I think, is probably the thing that I didn't like about it.
Yeah, that it should be
like,
more of
it. Like, it should be more focused on the sister relationship than the ex-lover relationship. Because, as you say, it's very CW for her to be like, I thought I knew him. But, I mean, at the same time, it's also bucking convention by her not having, like, a big, showdown moment with him. Well, she does, but then it kind of gets interrupted and changes.
But again, that happened multiple times on the whole first few episodes of season 10 are exactly Lois, like, knowing who Superman is and, like, and, like, not saying anything. Sorry, spoiler if you haven't watched the freaking season 10 of Smallville.
No, like, season like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Lois knows that he's the Blur.
No, that's only episode 10. Or not till season 10.
Not like, until season
legitimately
10, really.
Knows that Clark is the Blur because she forgets a couple times. They've retconned her a couple times. But when she actually, because it's a thing that really bothered me, like, it's a thing that, like, their relationship doesn't progress a certain way until, like, they both know that, like, that each other knows who they really are.
I guess I need to go back and rewatch those last couple seasons.
It's because I love, someone has, like, spliced together all the Lois and Clark moments from all of Smallville. I've watched those all on YouTube.
Okay, so this is a really great segue, which I just ruined by pointing out that it's a great segue. But one of my favorite things on Tumblr is when people post Lois and Clark stuff from Smallville. Because it just, like, outside of all of the terrible plots specific episodes, because that's not why I watched the show. I didn't watch the show for the Freak of the Week. I didn't watch the show for the Kryptonian issue, like, whatever. Like, I didn't watch the show for that. I watched the show for the characters and the relationships.
Cal Blue cough. Yeah. Like, awful.
So, whenever I get those, it's like these distilled injections of what I loved about that show. In particular, the relationship of Lois and Clark on that show, because I followed that arc personally. Because when Erica Durance showed up, I was like, I do not like her as Lois. And Clark was very much like, I do not like this person. And then over the course of the season, you're like, I guess she's all right. By the end of the season, he's like, I tolerate you. I guess we're friends.
Yeah.
And then, like, over the course of the next few seasons, I mean, like, that's, like, what, that's, like, season 4?
That's season 4, yeah.
That she shows up. Over the course of the next 2 or 3 seasons, like, she slowly starts to grow on you.
Yeah.
And gets under your skin to the point where, like, by the end of that series, I was like, I am just as in love with Lois as Clark is.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And I'm in love with their relationship and how much they care about each other.
It's so amazing.
And how flipping perfect they are for each other, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that... I mean, Lois and Clark is a ship that you cannot sink, right?
And, it's
and
like
I don't
someone,
care if Chloe or Lana or teleportation girl.
I was gonna say stupid teleportation girl.
Or anybody else gets in the way.
Yeah.
It does not matter. If Wonder Woman had showed up on that show, it doesn't matter. They are meant to be together.
Yeah.
And that New 52 can just take a flying leap because they push them in opposite directions because they're like, oh, it's not interesting that they're together.
Oh, it's like, it's the most interesting thing about
it's
Superman.
It's so interesting. It's fascinating, and it's wonderful when Lois is written well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, a lot of the time Lois is written as a very cardboard, flat character. And a lot of times Superman is written as a very cardboard, flat character. So when those are done poorly, it's not a good relationship. But when it's done well, it is so good. And it is the best relationship in comics. And just like Superman is the best character in comics. And like all, you know, we get into all that. But more importantly, let's talk about relationships on Arrow.
Ooh.
So
through this long email.
Yes. Super long. Two pages. Really a page and a half. Sorry?
Who got away with it? Who is this?
Leanne.
All right.
Finally. And she says, hi, Amanda and Mike. I'm a freshly picked Arrowhead thanks to Netflix binging. Upon digging deeper into the Arrow fandom, I came across your wonderful podcast.
Yay.
I love your fresh format as opposed to most TV show podcasts. It lets me re-experience the show and gives great feedback on tidbits and references I would never know as I don't read the comics, but do love the verse that the cast and the crew have created. So I will just add a little bit of a cliff note to that, a little asterisk, an editor's note. We are not as well versed in the comics as other people could be, so I appreciate that you're listening to us for that aspect, and I do my best.
We balance it out with Vancouver tidbits.
We do, but we could be better on the comics just because Green Arrow is not something that I'm super well versed in. But anyways, we appreciate that we're providing a service to people who are less versed than we are. I'm versed in overall comics, mostly Superman though. And right now, Marvel, but we don't need to get into that. I love the writing and direction of the show, as well as the acting. However, knowing the show's major focus is on Oliver's journey to becoming the true hero, Green Arrow, the ships have bothered me. Respecting all ships, I unwillingly became a skeptical Elicity shipper.
Oh.
Unwilling, given the nature of Chloe's arc in Smallville, and the appreciated, realistic, yet still heartbreaking series finale of How I Met Your Mother. Not going to get into spoilers. With AK's recent adamant Oliver, Laurel, Clark, Lois affirmation on TV Fanatic, as well as MG's, so she's referring to Mark Guggenheim and Alex Kreisberg,
I believe it's. I don't know.
I think that's right.
Yeah, sure.
So that's AK and MG. Mm-hmm. My ship has predictably and definitively sunk. And although I've been preparing myself for this devastation, oh man, do I relate to steric Teen Wolf shippers or what? Some questions arose. So there's two parts of this. Okay.
So many pop culture references.
So many. Which is one of the reasons why I like this even. The true Steric will always be Steven Derrick of Starkville House of L, and not this Steric that you speak of from Teen Wolf, which is also a Steven Derrick combination, I believe. But if you haven't listened to Steve and Derek on Starkville's House of L, which is a Smallville podcast, if you're watching Smallville right now, like because I know we have a couple of listeners who are going back and rewatching, start listening to that. I think they started at season 5 and they covered every episode afterwards. But and Steve comes in around season 6, I think. But that's the only true Steric ship in the universe.
I will now think of another one to bring next week because.
Okay.
Shipping is my thing.
And you should listen to them currently on Geek Out Loud, because Steve and Derek are both on Geek Out Loud, which is an awesome podcast that you guys should all go listen to. If you like comic book, nerd, geek, sci-fi, fantasy,
things,
dorky stuff, then you should be listening to Geek Out Loud. Geekoutpodcast.com. Steve will be happy that I plugged him. She continues. How do you feel about how the producers and writers of the show have handled both SV, I think she means Smallville, and Arrow in terms of crazy fan ships like Chloe Clark and Felicity Oliver. How are the true comic book fans like yourselves reacting to these ridiculous O-licity or no-licity Twitter / Tumblr campaigns? Does the canon of the source material really dictate the writing? Is there an organic way to explore the possibility of a non-canon plot point such as O-licity? Because of the creative abilities to make Arrow a standalone entity, borrowing from comic book canon, or would doing that be a disservice to DC and Green Arrow himself and the loyal comic book fans? I'm not dumb. I totally get why the producers and writers have Oliver / Laurel as Endgame, and I understand the need to create buzz for this awesome show, hence the almost face smushing whenever Oliver and Felicity are in a scene together. But I am a bit upset. That's me moving to the second page right there. But I am a bit upset this season that they took it there. I know the writers are true to themselves and to what the producers and network hope for the show. But damn, it hurts, LOL. But I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. I have not listened to all the podcasts yet. I have only listened from the Birds of Prey episodes onward. If you have done this type of in-depth analysis, please direct me to the proper episode number. That'd be great. Again, sorry about how long this was, but keep up the good work. I look forward to listening to all your podcast episodes. And hopefully after Lent, I gave up all social media. I hope to join your Facebook group to get some answers. Thanks. And that's from Leanne. So, long email.
Oh, there's a lot in that.
TLDR on that is non-canon ships. How do we feel about it?
Man, so. I'm such, like, I'm on all sorts of ships. But the thing with the Oliver Felicity stuff, and I mean, I guess, sorry, is her name Leah?
Leanne.
Is, I obviously didn't listen to all my previous sort of ranting about Felicity. Because the thing that bothered me about that is I felt it was inorganic and pandering to a specific type of audience that they had thought they had found.
And so, it's a more interesting story if they stay as friends.
It is. I will actually point out the part I loved the most about this episode, or one of the cutest moments, I thought, was that, I mean, I understand that Sarah and Diggle have combat background and that's a thing, but that, like, Ollie saves, his immediate instinct is he takes Felicity off of that staircase.
He protects her.
Their relationship is so great. And something that kind of bothers me is that people think that shipping needs to be sexual. And that's a thing that actually I completely think it misses a lot of fantastic relationships. If you think that a guy can only have one person in his life that he cares about. And that, I think, completely undermines the relationship between Oliver and Felicity that I think is really genuine and organic and is something that I want to keep happening. The great thing they did with Smallville is wrote Chloe into the comics. That's something, I don't think that it's disingenuous to the comic books at all. I think that people need to know that obviously this show is not the comic book. If it was the comic book, then they wouldn't make the show. There'd be no need for it. It's a different medium. It's a medium that has different viewers. It's a medium that has different audience connections to it. And I think that finding our own outlets into this show is essential. And the big thing I like about Felicity is of all the characters on the show, she's obviously the one I relate to the most at being sort of a not the super most athletic person that's maybe perhaps a little bit more like intelligently minded rather than other, right? She's my outlet into the show. And I think that the audience or that the writers sort of recognize that there's people that will connect with that character. And I don't think it's disingenuous at all to incorporate that. And I don't know, I think you're allowed to ship whatever you want to ship and that they'll find ways to come to fruition. But if you want characters to sleep together, I think that's an inorganic ship and you just need to deal with.
Okay. So I have opinions on ships and I respect everybody else's right to ship, but it does bother me to a certain degree that people will, they'll want to force relationships or like you're saying, that a ship needs to be sexual. So my example for this will be, and it's a little bit controversial, but take this the way that I mean it and not in a negative way. There is a subset of the Star Trek fan base, particularly the Star Trek movie fan base, the recent two movies, that ship Kirk and Spock. Okay. I'm not judging the gender issue there and the fact that they're both guys. That is not what bothers me. The thing that bothers me is that their relationship is not a sexual relationship, and that's not what that doesn't need to make them more interesting, right? Like, that doesn't need to make a ship happen, like you're saying. Like you're saying with Oliver and Felicity, you can ship them as best friends. Like, they can be a best friendship. Like, this is what I'll say. There are different types of ships. There are tugboats, there are freighters, and there are speedboats, and there are canoes. And there are all sorts of different types of ships and different types of boats, and they serve different purposes. So, personally, I absolutely 100% ship Sarah and Oliver, right? As a couple, as the true Black Canary, Green Arrow. I don't care what their civilian identities are, because in keeping with superhero sort of the folklore mythic aspect of it, they are not their civilian identities. Their true identities are more often than not their superhero identities, right? And then they put on a persona when they're civilians. So, to me, the fact that Sarah is the definitive Black Canary on this show, she's the definitive TV version of Black Canary, right? And Oliver is the definitive TV version of Green Arrow. To me, their relationship as Green Arrow and Black Canary is as canon as the comic books. And I understand that other people have a problem with that. Other people go like, oh, well, he's supposed to be with Laurel. Well, Laurel is not Dinah Lance.
Yeah. And that's actually like an interesting thing when you break down those characters, like this whole idea that Thea's middle name is what, Dearden, right? Thea Dearden Queen or Dearden, right? So this idea that she could be whatever character, like she could be Speedy, but she, right, so that they specifically leave themselves open to this idea that you can make these characters into different things.
It is influenced by and not beholden to. And I think that's the most important thing about Arrow when you consider it, not just in regards to ships, but in regards to just the canon in general.
Yeah, and that, all characters and how they come and go and how they get used. And
it's this universe's version of that.
Yeah.
Just like there's the Captain America from the regular Marvel comics, and there's a Captain America from the Ultimates comics. Mm-hmm. And they're very similar, but they're also very different. They serve different purposes in their narrative worlds. Mm-hmm. And for me, personally, the world that they've set up in Arrow is very much my definitive Green Arrow, because I don't have a lot of other touchstones for Green Arrow in the comics. There's a couple of other things, and animated series and stuff like that. But for me now, especially with how good this show is, this has now become my definitive Green Arrow. Much like how a lot of people regard the Dark Knight, Nolan Batman as a definitive version of Batman. For me, I don't like that Batman. In fact, I might go as far as to say I hate that Batman. I don't think that he has any place in a comic book world, and I don't consider those to be comic book movies. Those are cop movies where one of the cops just happens to wear a ridiculous outfit.
They're awesome cop movies with a lot of action, but they're cop movies.
They're very awesome movies, but at no point is Batman a detective, and at no point is there any sort of, like, I don't know, like, there's a... Batman needs to have a certain element of fun to it, and I find that those movies completely lose it, right? One of my things with Arrow, why I consider it, it's a very similar universe to the Nolan Batman universe, but one reason why I consider it superior is that as serious and as dark and as meaningful as it can be at times, there is also a lot of levity and there's a lot of heart.
Yeah.
And that comes with the territory because you're Green Arrow and you're not Batman. And Batman's a much more brooding, dark character.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Oliver is very much Batman with a heart, right? Like he's Batman with a smile instead of a frown, right? Yeah. And that's how the characters have differentiated themselves over the years. But yeah, I don't like that. It's just that it's become definitive for me. And so whatever they want to do on the show, I'm good with.
Yeah.
And wanting, it's a part of fandom, and people want to ship what they want to ship.
They do, and that's
it's not for me. It's not how I like.
But it's how it can make or break a show for me, though. Like shipping things.
Yeah.
Like for so hopefully people by now know shipping is just like when you want people to be in a relationship or something.
Oh,
like,
I don't think but we like, need to explain good. Shipping.
But like the idea of like loving someone or like having that, like the ideas sure. of various aspects of that. But like for example, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm using this on that. I forgive me. But Gossip Girl would have been ruined for me if like Chuck and Blair had not ended up together. And there are adamant shippers that like believe that Dan and Blair should have been together. And I just think that they are wrong. And that if Dan and Blair had been together, it would have ruined 6 years of a show for me.
Okay, so, like Hunger Games, right? Hunger Games is a big one because there's actually a shipping story built into
it. Yeah, there is.
And it's specific. And so that's a good example of saying
like it's sort of, they so make you ship things.
It does kind of bother me. I'm not going to say one way or the other which way I feel because I don't want to spoil things for people who are only watching the movies.
Yeah.
But like, having gotten through that entire series, where it ends, totally dissatisfied.
Yeah, bothers me too.
Because my ship went the other way. And so like, I can relate to it. And yes, when it's part of the construct of the story, I can get into it. But I don't know.
This is not maybe a place for ships.
On a show like this, I think one of the things that has differentiated Arrow on the CW is the fact that, there is room to ship, but they have gone out of their way, I think, on several occasions to quench fires, like to put out fires, and to say, this is not a show for shipping because the relationships mean more than just coupling.
Yeah, it's not the actually, OC, that's right? Great.
It's not. I'm trying to think of a show where like everybody ends up kind of sleeping with everybody, right? Like, because there are shows like
The Vampire Diaries,
90210, right? 90210 is very much that show where like at a certain point, unless people were related, almost everybody had been in a relationship. Like Liam, Matt Lanter's character, had dated like 5 or 6 of the 7 or 8 lead females.
Yeah.
Right? And dated. And he kissed almost all of them. Right? So it's like, and because he was the hunkiest, heartthrobbiest Luke Perry one, right? So he was the bad one.
You just totally dated yourself with a Luke Perry reference.
Well, because it's 90210, so I was going back to the analog of what that was supposed to be. Because that's what his character was supposed to be. I never watched the original 90210.
Okay, to be you can fair. Appreciate it.
But I know the history.
Yeah. But it's good. Yes, I guess shipping, that is true. And we can talk about it today. There's actually 2 places in here that I want to talk about, or a couple of different places in relationships as we go through.
Does one have to do with Barry and Felicity?
It sure does. Okay. That's another one. I think that they did very smart things in this episode regarding the Flash that's coming out. So
Severing some ties.
Severing some ties in ways that kind of make me sad. I'm like, no, I want crossover stuff.
Okay,
but it's positive.
Just to cap it off, on that note, and maybe we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get there, but it's kind of a tangent. I mean, I think that we christened the ship of Fliggle, right?
Fliggle.
Like, we christened that ship.
Fliggle.
And I don't know that it's caught on.
No.
I haven't seen a hashtag or anything. No. And, you know, part of me is disappointed in you guys, but that's okay. That's me telling you to get on Twitter and Facebook and everything and start using the hashtag Fliggle. F-E-L-I-G-G-L-E. Okay? Fliggle. And that is the ship. I totally ship Diggle and Felicity. And when Diggle's ex-wife is on that he's currently dating, I don't like her.
Yeah, I know.
I don't like her at all because there was that one moment a few episodes ago
where like they were in the car together and then he went off and...
Yeah, I guess it was in the beginning of that episode where she's like, if Slade shows up and he wants to kill me, there is nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
So just go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was like that moment of like her in her PJs and bringing him the coffee and their relationship, which is so underplayed. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's very under the radar and it pops up every now and then when it's organic.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so strong
and
because it feels genuine, even though we only see it like every 6 episodes.
But it reminds us that they're constantly hanging out together.
They work together,
and that
they
work together. And Diggle's always there. And this is a thing that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Like today, Slade gets shot, and we're like, Sarah, no, Diggle,
because
Diggle's always there.
Because he's always got your back.
He just is there. Anyways, so it's just,
Yeah,
man, this show was good.
It is so good. So with that, let's actually watch the episode.
Yeah, it's good. But thank you for the emails, everybody, and keep
yes,
coming in.
Yes, mail at quiverpodcast.com, M-A-I-L at quiverpodcast.com,
yeah.
If you want to send in your thoughts.
Yeah.
So we are just starting the episode right now.
With the CW
Presents. Yeah, CW Presents previously on. He's got to be something more than a something or other. They switched it up a little bit.
A little bit today.
This week.
They made it something about... I can't even remember what it was. Did you say
it's just a little, it with the beginning of it was just a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
It was a little bit briefer. Yeah. They probably a little bit more brief. They probably needed the extra minute for the episode itself because as you noted when we were first watching it, man, they packed a lot into the first 12 minutes of this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, the first act of this episode is insane.
Yeah.
How many surprises were in this episode too, right? The Roy stuff was crazy, and there's a lot of stuff, and like Thea stuff was interesting, and revelations about Isabel.
Detective Lance.
Isabel.
Yeah, there you go.
I was in the middle of a thought process. I realized her name took two syllables, so that's what happened there.
Yeah, so we open up on this mysterious black van and a person in a mask. You're like, oh, it's a bad guy? No, it's Felicity. She can't get the eye holes to line up, right?
That's true.
I love this, that it's her idea, that this is all her plan. And we're not quite sure. I liked how they played this for a little bit of mystery, a little bit of intrigue.
Yeah.
That we're like, well, what is their plan?
Did you like how Ollie like looked at her after that? She's like, I didn't think you'd say yes, and he just sort of like went to go like respond to her and be like, anyways.
So they are at the Robert Queen Applied Sciences Division building. You might remember this from a little episode, which is title I can't remember, but it's the one where Barry Allen first shows up.
Right, which she does when. She goes, and I like all the sort of different, and I mean, that was an email too, that Steven had mentioned that there's flash cameos in this episode, which I guess we sort of didn't really talk a lot about.
No, we'll
but
talk
I
about
really
it
like
they
how they're integrating that into here now.
Yeah. Important point they brought up that they used the skeleton key.
Yes.
And I say
you
immediately,
said, yeah.
Oh, that's a bad idea.
Yeah,
that's really dangerous holding on to it.
Yeah.
They should have gotten rid of it. They should have destroyed it.
Yeah.
And it's a lesson that I think that they learn later on in this episode.
Yep.
It's there's a Justice League story that focuses around Batman having files on all of the superheroes in the Justice League and all
of
their weaknesses. And the bad guys get it, and it comes out that Batman has all these plans for if one of them goes bad or is mind controlled or whatever. And everybody kind of gets mad at Batman for it. And it's like, yeah, well, it's dangerous information. In the same way, that technology was very dangerous.
Yeah.
So, unclear exactly what they were there to do, but they set up a bunch of charges.
Yeah.
And
now it's like everybody's out.
They're going to blow it up because they got to stop Slade. Slade can't have access to any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And with the events of last week and with Roshev taking over the company and revealing that she's working with Slade.
It's a big deal.
All of that stuff is very dangerous in his hands. So, mm-hmm.
And so we have her doing a... I like how they integrate news reports into the show as sort of an interesting way to do exposition.
Yeah.
I find it just because then there's some moments where exposition happens and you're like, ugh, that's just so... terrible. So it's nice to have an interesting
Well, you know, and it's very comic booky. It's a bit of a comic book trope to have the news reporter.
Oh, right. Like
And it sort of comes from the history of like Lois Lane and characters like that. And the news being very important to superheroes and their activities.
Yeah.
But
So the idea, I don't know what they're sort of just talking stuff out here about what they need for science, and they think now that they're ahead of Slade, which is the first thing where you're like, you're not ahead of Slade. I don't know, at least us.
One thing that I'll say is that for a supervillain that is a step ahead of them, I feel like he is genuinely and logically a step ahead of them. He is not the Joker, who is just always two or three steps ahead because he's two or three steps ahead because that's what makes his character interesting.
Yeah, no, I think he's just
a... Which I hate those characters. Yeah. If you ever listen to any of my Star Wars podcasts and Admiral Thrawn gets brought up, you will hear me say that he's one of the worst written characters in the entire Star Wars universe. Because he just always knows what the good guys are going to do before they do it. And they just say, like, oh, he's like a chess master. He just knows, he thinks three moves ahead. Yeah, but how did he have that information?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So whereas I like Slade that Slade is not that way.
Yeah, and he has that stuff, and you just deter him, he's just going to go a different route and be ahead of you that way.
Yeah, like he was ahead of them by a few steps because of the fact that he had gotten, he found Isabel Rochev and put her in position to take over Queen Consolidated to ruin Oliver, right?
Yeah.
Like, like, he's ahead of Oliver by virtue of the fact that he's done the work.
Yeah.
Not that he's just, he's a supervillain, so he's there.
Yeah, that's good.
So we kind of talked over Laurel and her
dad,
crazy
dad,
serial murderer board of arrow clues.
Oh, right, the thing that she was looking at, the green arrow stuff.
And now she's talking to Detective Lance, to her dad, saying, like, do you know who the
Arrow is.
And
this idea that we really
how about the girl in black?
Yeah, that he's gonna protect Arrow, which is just
But he's not protecting Arrow, and I think that that's one of the best things is that they wrote this in a way that, like, does he have a reason to protect the Arrow? Absolutely. Would he give up as much as he is for the Arrow? Maybe not. Mm-hmm. Maybe he would because he's a very idealistic character. Mm-hmm. But is he going to protect Sarah? Hell yes.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, to his dying breath. Like, he will let them beat the crap out of him before he gives her up.
Yeah.
Right? So, it's just one of the interesting parts of his character.
Yeah. And we have a super, or a Smallville cameo here for Darkseid, right?
Yep.
This lawyer that comes to get them to sign everything over.
Jeez, spoilers for season 10 of Smallville.
Sorry. You know what? It's... Catch up. It's been a
Yeah, so they need to get Thea to sign something so that they can move assets. Mm-hmm. I love that this was quick and that they didn't get into the details.
Yeah.
That it was just,
assets.
Essentially, all of their stock in Queen Consolidated has been diluted. It's not worth anything.
Yeah.
And Rochev has done that on purpose.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't need Queen Consolidated to be worth money. Because she's already rich.
Yeah.
But by doing this, they take away Oliver's resources. So what assets they do still have that are in the Queen name, they need to move before
that
Queen Consolidated.
And here we have Moira explaining why. Which is, this is a big revelation that I think Ollie knew his dad was not the best, but the idea that he now has a name and a face to put as a mistress for his dad. And that was the big thing last week, or 2 weeks ago when we were watching the episode, that I was sort of going, like, what are you talking about? What do you mean that, what are you talking about, the sins of the father? I don't understand what that is. So now it's sort of explained what happened with Isabel in a interesting way, which I really like.
No, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
So the important part here is that they have to get Thea to sign this document so that they can move everything.
Yeah.
And keep their money safe, which is important for rich people, you guys.
Yeah,
it's how the rich stay rich.
The island was really fascinating this week, and the greatest thing, again, if we're talking about relationship building, it reinforced for me this idea that we always forget that Laurel and Ollie sort of have different, Sarah and Ollie have different trajectories, right? Like, five years ago, Ollie was what Sarah is now. And I always forget that sort of idea of, like, how they went through stuff is different. Like, he's still protecting Sarah now, or he's the one that's going through his really dark stuff. And she's not totally there yet. Like, she hasn't gone to go train to become Black Canary yet, but she's just, like, on the verge of stuff. So,
yeah,
it's interesting.
But at the same time, she's been through stuff that we don't fully understand, mostly because we haven't seen it, right? Like, there was the whole year on the boat. We know that she ended up on the boat. She was on that boat for a year.
Yeah.
With Ivo.
Yeah.
And they allude to it in this episode.
Yeah.
But
they allude to it in such a way that I don't feel she was being psychologically tortured while she was on that boat for a year.
No, I don't think so either. But I do think that her reality shifted a lot.
Yeah.
And it was traumatic, right?
Yeah.
Whether or not Ivo treated her well or not is, has no right. bearing on that.
Right.
Her worldview previous to that was a very innocent
yeah.
college girl.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then after that, it's that, you know, there's a lot of really dark things in the world. There's a lot of really bad yeah. people out there.
Yeah.
And you need to defend yourself, and you sometimes need to do certain things, right? Yeah. You have to, and it's 'cause she's a very extreme person
mm-hmm.
now. And she has been very extreme. I mean, with strapping bombs to the guy last week to give him yeah. over to Slade, right? Yeah. Like,
it's a thing.
That's an extreme decision.
She's going. This was an interesting. This is the first time we had it where they go, "What's going on with Roy?" And they actually mention it. I thought that was just them tying up loose ends, but it's important. So here we have Deathstroke in the middle of the quiver. And see, immediately he just grabs Felicity and takes her, and it's really
great. I love how he does that too. Like, that was just very super heroic of yeah. him to like grab her, flip over the railing, and yeah. like land.
Yeah, yeah. It was one of my favorite moments from the whole, and it was such a small thing because it's like obviously Diggle and Sarah can take care of themselves in ways that Felicity cannot, but yeah. it still also shows a really interesting connection between the, I don't know, all the characters and them knowing how to deal with things. Oh, I missed that he yelled at Diggle to stay back, and Diggle did not listen, and goes
Diggle in doesn't
and
listen.
Gets hurt.
And oh, black driver, you don't have any superpowers.
Yeah, he used a gun, and it didn't quite work, but it all worked later. So, this is a great sort of stick fight. What is this called again? What is it?
They're called Kali.
Kali.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I have a pair of those in my closet.
It was a really well choreographed yeah. fight, and it was very quick, which yeah. I really liked.
It was, and this is in the first, right? This is the first chunk of the episode, yeah, we've got sort of a showdown between them, which is nice. It's sort of short and sweet and action-packed-y, and now we're going to a commercial break. So, stakes are getting up there, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, Slade is definitely, he's dangerous, and he's, the interesting thing is that he's toying with right, because
yeah.
as we'll find yeah. out later, he was there to grab
now
something.
We're back at the
hospital with Laurel. This is the painful scene.
This is the painful scene.
Yeah, this is coming up because she's gonna go in there, and
it's where she has to remember all the things. Yeah. Right, and this idea of going through all the steps.
So this is an interesting reveal
mm-hmm.
of her previous injuries, all of the scar tissue and everything.
I don't understand why he has to... See, now this is the first step. There's actually three steps to this process. He first goes, she has a lot of scar tissue. Was she in a war? And then Laurel goes in and goes, look at all that scar tissue.
Yeah.
I wonder what happened to her. So, but this could have been, sufficient to see the scars. I don't know. There was just a lot of...
It also feel like he was kind of breaching doctor-patient confidentiality.
Yeah, like, well, being, like, really, like...
But, whatever.
Anyways, so it's... They were just wanting us to be really clear that Laurel's going through her thought process.
Yeah.
To a point where I thought it was just a bit much. I don't know. I feel like there's better, the more elegant ways to write Laurel.
It's
that
a little
not really,
labored. Yeah.
They're not really... getting at. So I think this is that first thing that Laurel is really getting at, the fact this sort of ruse about the motorcycle is the first time where she's really connecting the two of them, right? So she's got that first thing with the doctor, then she's got seeing Sarah, then she's got the idea that they both have their story straight, they're both collaborating on this story in such a way, so they're both
yeah.
teammates that work together, right? So it's just there was a lot of stuff going on.
And she steps out
and leans against the door
and takes far too long. Yeah,
that was one flash. That's the second flash of yeah. all his scarred body. Then there's the scars of Sarah's body, and then there's Sarah as the canary. So we
from the episode where she rescued her.
Yeah, and yeah. So it was just whatever. We'll
so yeah, get there
that.
Faster, like, Laura. Get there bad. Faster.
And Sophia still diligently working at the Verdant Club. Always stocking. They stock a lot of bottles. I kind of like, there's like, they get around having to have extras in this show by always making it like before or after the club has opened or closed, which is kind of, it's useful for a CW budget, so it's good. It took him 3 tries, I guess, to get her to sign this thing. And she doesn't wind up in the end, does she?
I don't think she does, no.
Yeah. So it's, Thea's character is going on an interesting journey as well, in a way that, she really, it was kind of nice. Again, Thea's just come so far, but in the middle scene that we get with her, like the, or no, maybe it's this scene at the end, how she's talking about, how her life has just spiraled. You really get that she was messed up in the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Then she got better. And for a long time, she was like a strong, great character. And then she explains here this idea that Ollie is her half-brother. And then talking about Tommy and then talking about Merlin and talking about how then she, her parents are both murderers. And anyways, it messes her up. And you totally get where Thea is coming from. I don't know.
Yeah, this is the interesting part of what Slade is doing to Oliver. Mm-hmm. Because as he said on multiple occasions, he can't just kill him. Mm-hmm. He's got to make him feel despair, right? Yeah. Like, he has to totally destroy him.
Yeah.
And then he'll kill him.
Yeah.
Right? So, this idea that it's not about, like, he could physically
do whatever he
destroy wanted to. Oliver if he wanted to.
Yeah.
But instead, what's he going to do? He's going to take away his business. He's going to, I mean, his relationship with his mom was already strained.
Yeah.
But he's going to cause conflict between Thea and Oliver.
Yeah.
I want to
figure out what the thing is. I can't predict what it is yet, but who is the person that Slade is not going to be able to predict their actions? And actually, right now, I feel it might be Laurel. That might be, of the people that he would be most likely to underestimate, it'd be Laurel.
So by trying to turn Laurel against him.
Yeah, it could be his saving grace in the end, which could impact heavily my perception of that relationship in a really interesting way.
Sure.
And I think that they got to that today, because now you're talking about this idea of chipping away at him, and I think that that's really interesting. Oh, first part of the most exposition-y exposition ever.
At the Home Depot.
At the Home Depot with these 2 scientists from Star Labs. Is Home Depot Canadian or is Home Depot a
no, I think that's a, I think
it's
that's
just like a, Rona or whatever.
Yeah, international.
Anyways, talking about particle accelerators and Barry. So these are the people from Flash, right? So these characters...
Caitlin Snow and Cisco something.
So they are going to be in the Flash show series. So we've got our first couple characters, which is nice. So Cisco and Caitlin. Caitlin looks remarkably like either Fitz or Simmons from the...
No one knows.
Yeah, from...
literally nobody knows. As I said to you when we were watching this episode originally, I don't think that the writers or the actors even know which one is Fitz and which one is Simmons.
We're talking about... What is that show? Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That thing. All right. Are you getting a bad vibe off this guy? Oh, I totally missed... I missed that the first time. That was kind of witty.
I like Danielle Panabaker. She was in a fantastic... It's not her first superhero foray into the superhero world. She's in an awesome Disney movie called Sky High. One of the best movies ever made. I say that with a tinge of irony, but I don't mean it.
At the same time.
It is, like, as far as a superhero movie for kids, it is the best superhero movie for kids.
Nice.
I would say better than Incredibles.
Cool. Wow, that's impressive. So Arthur Light, you said this is a comic reference.
Yeah, so, Dr. Light. Dr. Light, big player in Identity Crisis and a few other things. Was a bit of a joke character for a long time, and then was brought back in the modern stuff.
So what I like about this is the idea that they're setting up these 2 day player characters on what would be Arrow to be real, like, look at them, they're sciencey and know how to use things characters for the Flash.
Yeah.
So, I do like what they did with these characters, if nothing else, to make me super stoked for Flash pilot, and I cannot wait. And I like that they just left it. Like, that was the thing, you know.
I am really hoping that they just release the pilot, like, at Comic-Con or something. They're just like, it's on iTunes, something like that, so that we could just watch it. Because I want to see it, because it, Flash-related news for people, the pilot... was shown for the first time to, I guess, the studio. Not the studio, to the CW or whatever.
Network.
So it was shown to executives, screened for the executives for the first time. So, nice. So we should be hearing soon. We'll hear it up front, whether or not it gets a full season pickup. But, right. I mean,
yeah.
If it's half as good as Arrow, it's a lock.
Yeah. I forgot, I didn't see Laurel follow them to Star Labs before. I didn't realize how much of this episode, we're in the commercials now. So
yeah, that was interesting. I didn't notice
but
that.
But I didn't notice that Laurel has been doing investigating throughout the whole thing. That she went to Verdant and waited outside in her car and then turned the car on because it was the last shot of the thing where they were leaving on the motorcycle. And I was going to say something before we moved on to Star Labs, but I didn't because I was like, I wonder if this is going to come back. And it did. Laurel followed them. So she's just doing a lot of sleuthing throughout this whole episode. Which I didn't really...
Laurel has done more detective work in the first half an hour of this episode than Batman did in all three movies. All three of those movies. Hanging someone upside down and screaming at them is not detective work. Tell me who did the thing. That did the thing? I'll go get that guy and ask him who did the other thing. You suck, Batman. You suck. Real Batman is
so
great.
Many people making
but Christopher so Nolan Batman sucks.
So
sorry,
many
guys.
People being mad.
Yeah, well.
By the way, tell us if you're watching The 100 because, okay, we're back now for the show. But, like, who's watching
Who's watching
show?
The 100 that makes it a hit series?
I don't know because it keeps saying the hit series, The 100.
I think I may have heard somebody mentioned, read somebody mention something on the Facebook group. Right. But so this is our first indication that Felicity actually knows Caitlin and Cisco.
Yeah.
And
the interesting thing that you get an interesting thing from Caitlin here of her characterization with Felicity that she sort of is really going, do you know who it was? And I don't know, very smart and witty.
Yeah.
A character that I feel in the scene directly presents a foil for Felicity in many ways. So, which is kind of interesting. There's a nice bit of animosity there. So, it's interesting. And then we are checking up on Barry. So apparently Barry is, what, in Star Labs?
So he was in the hospital. His condition has deteriorated, so he's been moved to Star Labs.
Yeah. So, again, still on hiatus. And so Iris, this is the moment that I was shipping stuff, right? Cisco is sort of brings up this girl and then says he's his... She's his
Iris sister. West, which is important.
Yeah. So.
It's a very I believe again I am not up on my Flash lore, but I believe it's a similar situation to saying that Laurel Lance is on Arrow.
Okay.
So it's like so they're eventually.
It's a thing. So I kind of like that though because it cuts ties in a clean way that allows the Flash to be its own world.
Yes.
While still being integrated and set up in this world, I think it serves its purpose much better than anything like a backdoor pilot would have. For the Flash. I think that was a very solid way to identify both the worlds.
Although, I will say, I don't appreciate the tease.
Yeah.
I don't appreciate the tease, because we got it already,
we did sort of get it, but we didn't,
I just, I really want both shows. I really want both shows to be on now so that I can enjoy them. So, they're just going over the exposition of what it was that... Felicity asks them point blank, what did he steal? And they're like, oh, we can't tell you what he stole because it's a secret.
Yeah.
And so they go back to the Arrow Cave and Felicity's like, oh, I found out what it was already. I think she was just being polite.
And once they
didn't give it up, she just went hacked in and found out.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's a device for doing blood transfusions.
From one person
to multiple people. But the important part is that this this machine will take the blood from one person, mix it with the blood from another person, and with the way that the Mirakuru works, it'll metabolize in the machine and not in the person, which is the thing that kills people.
Right,
is the metabolizing, right? It was like that part of
slave,
like sort of convulsing and then dying and then coming back, right?
So we're back on the island, and I was talking about how there's a cure for the Mirakuru.
And his arm is super infected.
Super gross.
And I'm no doctor,
he's dying.
But I'm fairly certain that if it had gotten that infected,
he would
already be dead because it would have gotten into his bloodstream, into his heart, and stopped his heart. Because that's how infections kill you most of the time.
That is upsetting. I just can think about it now. It's all gross. And anyways, so talking about how he found it and that he wants a quick death is basically what he's asked for.
Yeah.
And that from Sarah, like he's always talking directly to Sarah, which I find interesting in this.
And he's got he has a cure for the Mercury.
Yeah.
Did you say that already?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, that he's talking about that he's telling them about how to get the cure. Because
I'm wondering, I guess he doesn't really have anything to gain here, because as he says, he's already dead. Like, he's gonna die. He just doesn't want to slowly, painfully die. So, I guess he really doesn't have anything to gain by this.
I don't think he has anything to gain from lying, and I don't think that it's something that he necessarily needs. I don't know, from them, like, it
I
seems
guess it's
like
not
I mean,
a lie, because we find out later
yeah, we do,
that
there
that
is a cure, and
that
he had the cure. So this is setting up things in a very clear way, and you were saying it's character development. So this idea, I didn't know that they had guns. I don't know why they don't just give it to him, that he can shoot himself. But, I don't know, you said that it had to do with character development. I said that, I accept your answer.
Yeah, it was important for Oliver
and Sarah
and to see where they are as individuals.
Yeah, which is good. I love this little thing from Isabel going, I'm under 30 and I am the head of a Fortune 500 company, and I just like it. It's good. She's pretty great.
I really like her in this because for me at least, it's the first time that I have seen
Summer Glau.
Summer Glau get to play a three-dimensional character, because as much as I love her in Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles, and her performance is brilliant,
she's
playing a robot literally, right?
Like,
she plays a robot with this incredible depth of, like, does this robot have feelings? And because that show got canceled after that.
Oh, it's
season,
so the worst
we will
if
never
anybody.
Know.
Oh.
Because they alluded to the fact that maybe she did, so but good. We'll never know.
By the way, Cersei from Game of Thrones, you know, Lena Headey is in also
Terminator.
Yeah,
it's also in
Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles. Recommended.
Such a good show.
Quickly recommended. If you want your heart torn out because it doesn't end.
Oh, yeah.
So.
But I like that, because I don't know, and I haven't watched all of Firefly. I've only seen a little bit of it. But from what I've seen of Firefly, she's very much like a sort of a one-note character, from what I've seen of her.
I mean, you're right. This is very... She's very dynamic in this show. I kind of like it. She has the two different characters.
She smiles sometimes. Like,
and she's talking here. So this is sort of the big plot device that just got dropped here, was the fact that she was in a relationship with his dad, and they had a genuine relationship, and then Thea got hurt, and that's what broke them up, is because he went back to help Thea even though Thea was not his daughter. And this idea that that's the big revelation, that he knew that Thea wasn't his daughter, and that being a really big, I don't know, the more that we get away from him, the more I kind of really like this dad character, even though we sort of never really explored him. I don't know, he seems like an interesting sort of person.
Well, this is all his fault.
Right? Yeah.
So that sins of the father thing is a very interesting thing, because it carries through that a lot of the reason why Oliver does what he does is because of that.
Yeah.
Now, this was very interesting. I really liked how this scene went, because although Quentin's superior officer, the chief or whatever, has seemed to, he's got a bit of an axe to grind with Detective Lance.
It seems
other
like
cops are like,
this
is ridiculous. The fact that you're in here is stupid.
Yeah. It's good.
These guards are so, but so I like that aspect of it, because it shows that yes, he was a good cop. He was liked by other cops.
And, yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, it's just
respected.
Power dynamics, and that's the thing that you always know that someone is powerful is when lots of people like them, except for the people in charge. And that's like when you can tell that someone is powerful.
And the people that they've put away.
And the people that they put away feel like coming to destroy them.
Now I'm curious whether or not this is part of a larger thing, or whether or not this is just something that happened.
Yeah.
Right. Because it felt almost like it was part of like a plan.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it could just be...
For this particular episode.
Like, to say, like, he's... Just to give us the idea that if you think that he's safe while he's in prison, obviously he's not. He's a cop in prison.
Which would be...
And he put a lot of those guys there.
Yeah,
right?
And it makes a lot of... there's a lot of stakes.
And it also... It raises the stakes, and it also shows his character. Because even under those circumstances, he's still not going to give them up, right?
Yeah. Oh, this scene really bothered me with between Laurel and the Arrow when she's talking about her connections with him. This was the most CWE scene, I think, in this week's episode. Just the idea that she's really, I don't know, going through her struggle.
Yeah.
This idea of, she never tells him, right? Her cell phone vibrates and saves her from having to actually say, oh, I know you're the Arrow. And of course, it's because she has to go help her dad. And that is more important. So,
this is a little bit of a cheat. What is it? And then they just cut to commercial.
Yeah.
Instead of...
Don't you ever wonder, because, like, what it is they have to say?
Because you can't write yourself... Like, they've written themselves into a corner.
Yeah.
How do you write yourselves out of that scene?
Yep.
You don't.
You just cut to commercial. It was... I don't know. It was kind of an awkward scene.
Something you get to do in TV, you don't get to do it in movies.
Yeah. Well, isn't, like, an epic thing from that Batman movie that, like, he saves Rachel, they fall out the window, and then they don't, like,
deal with... I'm not saying people don't do it in movies, but you shouldn't do that in a movie, because a movie is one narrative, right?
Yeah, so you can't...
The acts aren't broken up in an actual structured way that they are on TV.
I'm back with that shot of Iron Knights.
Because that is, in theatrical terms, when the curtain would close.
Right, yeah.
And intermission would happen.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We'd come back in 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Or they'd change the set and we'd come back.
I feel like they... Do they send you to the actual prison before you've gone on trial? Because I feel like he would be in a holding cell of some kind.
I mean, you're going to the holding cell when you've been arrested and booked.
Right.
But if you're not released on bail, then yes, you go to prison. But he wouldn't be. It's interesting that they sent him to Iron Heights, because Iron Heights is like a penitentiary, so it's long term.
Yeah,
there are jails,
which is what I mean. Yeah, like this just seems... Iron Heights seems like an extreme place to have sent him.
Yeah.
But I guess it works for the narrative or whatever. Anyways, best scene in the whole episode, and I really want to pay attention to these subtitles. So the idea that she knows who the Arrow is, and that the most interesting thing in this moment is that I think that Lance knows that Laurel does know who the Arrow is, and he totally believes that she would know, because subconsciously he knows who it is, right? Like, he knows who it is, but he won't let himself confirm it. It's one of those things that you can go for a long time convincing yourself of something until you might know that this didn't actually happen, right? I don't know, buy a lottery ticket, and you don't know you didn't win the lottery until you check those numbers. So you can live for 3 hours thinking that you possibly could have won the lottery, but you know that you didn't. So it's just that interesting. It's great. It's and it really hits home with her. I really like the scenes between actually Laurel and Detective Lance, because I think they're really genuine, and is a really nice depth to both of these characters in their relationship. So
I just like most scenes with Detective Lance in them,
because
he's just so like that. Because that really is, like, as I said before, a soliloquy. Like he's kind of... it's not really, because he's not stepping out and addressing the audience, but he kind of is, because
he's telling us
why he doesn't care who the Arrow is.
And shout out to Detective Lance, to Paul Blackthorne. He's doing a Q&A, I think, on April the 26th on his Facebook page. But he also sort of said he would come on Quiver in a comment, sort of really nonchalantly.
Yeah.
But then he totally didn't follow up with this. So tweet at Paul Blackthorne, or go on his Facebook page going, come on Quiver. He hasn't followed up yet, but he sort of said he would do something. So hopefully we'll get to talk to Paul Blackthorne eventually.
So just like, because this happened with Stephen Amell as well, where like we hit him on Twitter with a bunch of stuff and he went, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then it put the seed in his mind, and then eventually he went, okay, I'm going to do a podcast. Which podcast should I do? And that was the opportunity. Yeah. So if you just keep, and like I said in my post initially, politely let him know.
Politely,
It's don't, not a fun
moment.
Yeah,
it would
don't,
just be good.
Don't but, completely, yeah. you know, just nice. Like, spam him with, you should go on Quiver, you should go on Quiver. But if you say, if you let him know that you would love it if he would do an interview with us,
then that'd be great.
It's helpful.
And he is, like I said, he's trying to build his social media presence, so even if you don't follow him, you can go on Facebook and stuff. We talked over Laurel, sort of, for some unbeknownst reason to me, being enough of a threat to the DA to drop the charges, that was the most unbelievable.
Yeah, it felt a little contrived and a little bit like they just needed to get Detective Lance out of the jail. Yeah,
but I mean, whatever, let's believe it. And then Laurel had a nice moment with Sarah. And now we're at Thea and Ollie.
So, I want to point out that Thea is wearing a lot of red in this episode. And red, with the exception of Roy, and also with Roy, because Roy's kind of always been at odds with Oliver. But they've used red as a color a lot of the time to signify when someone is adversarial to Oliver. Yeah. Yeah. So, when Moira's adversarial, she's wearing red. When she's doing something evil, she's wearing red. Right? And it's too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence. Right?
The people that are doing that are working on the show are very invested in it, and I totally believe that that's an active choice.
Yeah, so it's interesting that they put her in red in the earlier scene, and then they put her in a red jacket in this scene.
So
later she's in blue, but
it's because you have the illusion that maybe later she will actually agree. This is the TELUS, by the way. So that's out at UBC, this circular building that he's going into with all his stuff. It's one of the most... It's in Josie and the Pussycats, and also the upcoming Step Up 17 or whatever is coming up. But it's like
it's only like the fifth
it
one.
It is, whatever. But it's cool. Those are sort of like little seats. You can see like sort of the balcony. They did an excellent Romeo and Juliet there a little while ago. But
is it a theater in the round?
It can be, and it can also be, but it's a circular space that you can move out one of the walls. It's very dynamic. It's great for filming there, so people film all the time. I think they did the 4400, that's actually, like, the base where the 4400 is, like, their main, I don't know, I've never watched the 4400, but whatever the show is, the TELUS was, like, their main base.
I think they used it in an episode of Smallville, where one of the prison episodes.
Probably.
Because I remember the prison, cool the one where...
Oh, and this is the moment where we looked up and we go, that's not Slade! And we're like, no, it's Roy! And then you see
they
Max
got
and
us.
You're
they
like,
totally got
definitely.
Us. I don't know if they got everybody else.
No,
I'm curious to know how many people got.
Did they get you or not? Because it wasn't until the aerial shot where you sort of see his hair.
You could tell it wasn't Slade.
You could tell it wasn't Slade. And we go, no! And then you see his abs and you're like, it's... obviously Roy.
I'm sure some of our listeners out there put it together before we did.
I don't understand
but
how we
it was classic earlier. Misdirection, it right? Was. It was classic, it was. Like, look over here, we, like, the plan is go in and kill Slade.
Yeah.
And it was like, even up until he was there and he was walking up, I was like, how are they going to get out of this? Is he just going to be okay and they're just going to have a nice shirtless fight?
Yeah. What is it?
And then they start pulling up and over in the aerial shot. Yeah. And it was like, oh my goodness.
It's so...
They tricked us.
It was great.
They got us so good by taking Roy out
because
of the episode.
They did such
last
a good
time.
Job with taking Roy out on purpose that we weren't ever thinking about it. We thought, I don't know what we were thinking, but it was a great... Anyways... It was interesting, and so we're back
in,
and poor Roy.
And he can't disconnect him because of reasons. Well, science, because science.
Sure.
I'm sure Neil deGrasse Tyson could tell us why.
Why? Okay, sure. Because Slade says right here that it will end his life. He does say surely as a caveat, so he doesn't say definitely. But, anyways.
I love that Roshev is just kind of his little lapdog at this point.
Yeah.
And it really, her standing behind him and kind of, and obviously being, even though she's behind him, she still feels like lower.
Yeah.
Even though she's technically above him.
But it's true. She's like a minion. She's.
Yeah.
Well, minion is maybe not.
And here comes one of the best moments. In the series so far.
Yeah.
Because he shoots this out and then he rapid fires a bunch of arrows at Slade. And Slade don't even care.
Yeah, he just
doesn't
sort of,
break a sweat. Yeah. He just chops those arrows and deflects them and whatnot.
It's pretty sweet.
And then Isabel tries to shoot a superhero with a gun. And it's
silly,
like, you know
Isabel.
What?
And
should
then
know better
tries to actually attack. And then Slade sort of slams Ollie against the wall.
It definitely looked like it hurt because it took out some of the concrete.
Yeah.
But Oliver's prepared.
With a electrocutie, shocky arrow.
Some kind of like explosive, shocking arrow.
Which is good. I like it when he uses the gadget arrows.
Yeah.
And then taking something off of the apparatus, whatever it is.
The science.
The science.
He took some science from the science so that they can do some science later. But Roshev's not out yet. And
she's got her gun and then is shot. And I think it's weird that we ever thought that that may have been Sarah, because obviously the person that uses the gun is Diggle.
It's Diggle.
And
yeah.
So it's a...
I think our connection, like my connection was to the last time we saw the island, which was
Sarah. Right, Sarah shooting the gun. Oh, yeah.
So I thought, like, that my brain went there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I... Slade's getting back up, so before he does, they're going to zip out of there, and we get another commercial
break. There is no ceiling roof in the TELUS that is inaccurate. He could not have just gone through the ceiling. Incongruent. Anyways, but that's cool. It was good. Man, there's a lot happened in this episode. Dude, we didn't even talk about the idea that Felicity, when she first told him where Slade was, that she had this moment where she just really didn't want him to go. Because this idea that she knew that it would be really dangerous for him. And I think that was the big thing for us, is why the misdirection worked so well.
Yeah.
Because we really believe that everybody believed the stakes of him going to fight Slade.
And we're back in the episode now.
With Roy's very chiseled jaw.
And he's not... He's still out of it. He's... This is important, because this is going to set up next week's episode.
Yeah.
Where he's going to be very destructive. I think it's going to end... with Oliver using the cure on Roy.
Interesting. I think that that's a very accurate prediction. I would support that prediction. I give you good odds on that. I was going to try to give you the odds, but I don't know what actually means good odds, so I didn't try to be gambly. So here we have the idea of a cure. This is one of the only episodes this season where they've had a really direct link to a discovery on the island and a revelation... Yeah. In our modern timeline, which I really like, and it worked very well, because the conceit that he hadn't told them about a cure up until this point makes sense based on this thing, this next thing that he says, that 5 years ago he had the chance to use the cure on Slade, and he chose to kill him instead. So I think that that's it's a very nice link, and I've been missing that. That was one of the greatest things I think the island did last season, was find these really interesting parallels. And then of course we come back to the island with Sarah. And Ivo going to shoot him, and still in this standoff, and then Ollie not letting her do it, and so for what we're supposed to believe would be selfish reasons, like this idea that he wants Ivo to suffer, that, or at least what Ivo says, right, that he is trying to be like, no, I'm actually a good person and you should help me, and don't be so horrible, Oliver, when really what he chooses to do here by shooting Ivo is the very heroic thing to do in his own brain, that he is honoring both what Ivo wants and what he thinks Sarah needs. So while sort of chipping away,
I think it's interesting that that's how you interpreted that, because how I interpreted that is that, like, that was revenge.
Really?
Yeah, that was for killing Shadow, and that was for, because everything's his fault.
Huh.
Everything at this point, everything that's gone wrong at this point is Ivo's fault. Right? The fact that they know that the Mirakuru is there, Ivo's fault.
But see, the thing is, the actual revenge would be letting him die a slow death.
Sure.
What he wants in that moment is to be shot. So the fact that Ollie shoots him...
But I think Oliver wanted to be responsible. He wanted to kill
him. True. I guess the double thing that happens, though, as a consequence, is he also does wind up protecting Sarah in a way. So, but yeah, it's fascinating. And so here we have Thea leaving the mansion because she accurately predicts that it probably will get taken away, which I think is kind of funny, right? Dealing with the actual economic consequences. And I find it funny that Moira did not know that Ollie's dad knew about Merlin. What is Ollie's first dad's name?
Robert,
right where I am. So this thing, they've got a nice blue scheme going on here. And she's wearing this like half haltery type thing. With like this weird midriff.
I found it to
thing.
Be a bit of a questionable outfit.
Myself, I don't know, this weird midriff. I just discovered that 2 days ago someone was talking about that being a fashionable thing, and I was like, I've never
the high waisted pants.
Yeah, the high waisted pants with the short crop top.
Yeah,
and I go, what is that? Is that that's obviously a very recent trend.
It's the Princess Jasmine look.
Yeah, the Princess Jasmine look, man. It's apparently very hot right now. I don't know. I was just anyways.
I'm not a fan personally.
It's an odd choice. I don't know.
It's revealing for all the wrong reasons.
It's an odd.
Right.
But on her, it works. I don't know. I think that this outfit was kind of cute on her. But anyway, so she leaves without signing the papers and just sort of goes goodbye. And how we have Felicity coming back to Star Labs and giving them the Mirakuru. And I didn't quite get that exchange. That look at that awful Photoshop. Terrible Photoshop on that photo of the family, where you could just tell that they just had to put a lot of time and effort into making Abercrombie Oliver fit into that.
Maybe it was just a really bad Polaroid camera.
Maybe.
You remember those really, like, in, like, the the late 90s?
Yeah.
When Polaroid tried to, like, have a comeback with those, like sticker ones?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe it was from one of those cameras.
I did want some of those. Those were great.
Oh, we all wanted them because Much Music told us.
Yeah.
Sorry, Canadian.
Yeah.
MTV told us that we wanted them.
Yeah. Oh, man, they did, like, a Much Music. Anyways, whatever, we won't get into it. But with Strumbleopolis going on to Hockey Night in Canada. So,
So Laurel showed up there to comfort Oliver, oddly and just, without explanation. Yeah. And
he let her.
What is this for? And she says, because I care about you.
Can everybody just look how comically large Slade's hand is on Isabel's forehead? It just shows this great difference in what a big Dothraki dude. Don't even understand. He's just so big. And
Australia.
I always forget that.
He's Australian.
That he's
Australian
he's
mate.
That's cool.
Wrestling crocodiles. Summer Glau is a very small person. So
it's just a great contrast between the two of them.
No, it is. It's awesome.
It's just great.
He's a big dude and he's he looks big next to Stephen Amell.
Yeah, that is true, yeah.
And I don't consider myself to be a particularly short person. I think I'm average.
You're relatively
tall,
if not
a little bit above average.
Yeah.
And if you look at the pictures on our Facebook page, Stephen Amell is like a good almost half a foot taller than me.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Oh, wow.
Like
he's
quite a bit bigger than me.
Yeah.
And then Slade is quite a bit bigger than him.
Wow, yeah.
Which means that, Fan Expo... if you're listening to this on Saturday, I'm probably at Fan Expo.
Nice.
And Manu Bennett is there, and hopefully I get to meet him and see Stephen Amell again say hi. Mm-hmm. And I'm anticipating Manu Bennett being,
ginormous.
Dothraki. I think you were right when you said Dothraki.
Yeah, man. It's great.
It's very similar to Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, can you imagine the two of them in a fight? Slade versus Khal Drogo? Man.
If Slade didn't have, he's got the superpowers.
He's got the technology.
Well, okay, but technology is not going to be in it because it's a fight.
Yes.
So it's one-on-one.
It's true.
So I'm going to say...
Fine.
I got to give the edge to Slade on all accounts. Arrow Slade has superpowers. Regular Slade, I don't believe, has superpowers. He's just a ninja assassin. I think as we sort of saw with the Dothraki in season one of Game of Thrones, blunt instruments, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're very, like...
There's...
His fighting style is kind of...
They'd be...
His undoing a little bit.
So. That is true.
So...
Interesting. So, Game of Thrones, it's a good show.
Yeah. Well, it's back. And
it's
that's
back.
Why it's coming
it's
up.
Back.
It's
back. That's why it's coming
back.
Up. Because we're like,
so,
Game of Thrones,
it's in our minds.
But this episode's done. And we just want to keep talking.
The last episode of Game of Thrones.
I know. We're really sorry that we're those annoying people that if you're not watching Game of Thrones, all you hear is Game of Thrones stuff. But
I'm sorry that you're that person that doesn't watch
Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Why?
It's sad.
Why?
Yeah, it's sad. Although you told me to watch True Detective.
Yeah.
The most boring show I have ever seen. It is so boring.
Hold up. Do you hear that? That's the sound of vindication.
Because it is
one of the best written things ever.
Okay.
It is definitely one of the best written TV shows.
But it's one of those ideas.
And
that
it's
some
one of the best TV shows in
some
recent
things
history.
Some people like and things other people don't.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that take everything we say with a grain of salt, but genuinely Game of Thrones is awesome, so you should watch it. But I don't know. It's
how far into True Detective did you make it? I saw Andrew's post.
I made it 20 minutes without looking away Then I spent the next 20 minutes on my computer while watching it, and then I finally had to turn it off and watch YouTube videos because I just couldn't. I couldn't go anymore. Like, I just, it was a thing. I genuinely tried.
Why?
It's
not to say that you need to give it an episode or two to get into it, because I was into it after, like, maybe the...
Right, but
I don't even remember the first 10 minutes of it, but, like, very quickly I was like, oh, yeah, no, I see exactly what everybody's talking about.
I mean, it's...
you get into the second episode, and and it's like, whoa, wait a second, what? No. Okay.
Cool.
That's the best thing ever.
Cool. Anyways, I mean, good on you for watching that. But there's so many, it's golden age of television right now, and everybody that's listening to this knows that in terms of watching Arrow and amazing things.
So.
Everything that you like could possibly, some set photos leaked from the new Doctor Who stuff coming out, which is exciting.
Doctor Boo.
Hey, you're the worst.
That's my new eye.
You're the worst.
No, I'm going to give Capaldi a try.
Yeah.
I don't anticipate...
Matt Smith was like, I love him.
This is my thing with Doctor Who. Doctor Who has some very cool stuff that happens in select Doctor Who episodes. Okay? But Doctor Who as a complete piece of media, for me, no thank you.
Okay.
Because it's just, it's so wildly inconsistent. Huh. It's so wildly inconsistent.
Your opinion. All right, let's, it's fine. I don't watch it for its consistency. It's not something that I'm like,
yeah,
I'm going to watch Doctor Who.
It's wibbly,
so
wobbly, timey-wimey. No thanks.
Sure.
No thanks. I like rules in my science
fiction. I like the characters in my science fiction. That's why I watch science fiction, is for the characters. It has nothing to do.
Then stop watching science fiction, jeez.
No, they're great.
Science fiction is not about the characters.
I disagree.
No, science fiction, definitively, science fiction... not about the characters.
All right.
If you have good science fiction with good characters, I'll point at Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Great science fiction premise, awesome characters, makes a really, really good movie. Okay?
Cool.
But, let's see, what's something with really good science fiction but terrible characters?
You can think about this. I'll just give everybody
social
media links.
So, new Star Trek.
Okay.
First Star Trek... was okay. I mean, I really like the first Star Trek. Second Star Trek movie with the new cast.
Yeah.
Great characters, terrible science fiction.
Yeah, okay.
Bad movie, right? And so that's what,
But here's where we disagree. Because the characters were awesome and it had science fiction elements, I loved it. Because, like, I just like that sort of world that's built. I will forgive any sort of crappiness in the world if the characters are strong enough. Benedict Cumberbatch!
Badger Man Cumberbund.
Yeah, love him.
Bias.
But it's
bias.
I actually, in all fairness, kind of liked it in spite of him. Because it's because I love Spock. I love Zachary Quinto. He's, like, my favorite. And I love what they're doing with
We're going to have to
character.
Agree to disagree.
We will. All right.
Worst part of the Star Trek movies. All
right. Well,
Zachary Quinto as Spock.
Let's...
Best part? Carl Urban as Hank. Hank McCoy. Hank McCoy is Beast.
Yeah.
Leonard McCoy.
As Leonard McCoy. And,
Bones.
No, I really like,
Also
Scotty.
Watch Dread.
Scotty.
Carl Urban.
It's good.
Almost Human.
Look at all these recommendations you have for other shows. We only have 4 weeks left of Arrow. We got
good science fiction, terrible characters, Riddick.
Huh.
Riddick.
I concede that point.
Great science fiction, terrible characters, so you don't care what's happening in the science fiction. And the other part of that is that, like, Pitch Black was this one kind of movie, and then Riddick is the sequel, and it's this other
completely
different type of movie.
Yeah.
People were like, why? I don't understand. Why is Riddick the character in this movie? Who are the bad guys? What is going on?
Yeah.
But, like, the science fiction of it, cool. The science fiction of it, very cool. But the character is totally weak. Bad movie.
Okay.
Although Carl Urban, in that, he's pretty cool.
Are we going to watch The Thing for next week?
Yeah, let's watch The Thing for next week.
Preview for Seeing Red.
Seeing Red. It's pretty... The whole preview is pretty much
just
Roy punching things.
I was going to say.
I'm going to punch it! he's Wreck-It Roy.
Wreck-It Roy.
I'm going to wreck it.
Oh, Wreck-It Roy! Hashtag Wreck-It Roy.
Yeah.
I love it. Look at that seething boy talking.
He's going to kill Thea.
I know, because she's...
Spoilers, Thea dies.
Yeah.
Spoilers, I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's not a spoiler.
Spoiler's not a spoiler.
The spoiler's not a spoiler. Mike doesn't know what he's talking about.
No, I'm just making things up.
But it's one of those things where Thea's going to have her self-sacrificing moment, and then Roy's going to be... Anyways, there's lots happening. God, we talked for so long today. It's good.
Okay, so let's wrap it up then.
We're all done. Thanks.
See you later, guys. Bye. Stay sharp.
You said, hey, that's mean. Can't just take my stay sharp. So sad. Tell people where to email us.
Oh, okay. Mail@quiverpodcast.com is our email. You can find us online. Quiverpodcast.com is our home on the internet. Tim does a very great job of keeping you guys updated on all the latest and greatest news. We do absolutely nothing.
I know. I love it when it's like, Quiver has a new post about this new news item. I'm like, that's great. I love that Quiver's doing all these good
Tim's
things.
Tim's the best. He manages that, and he also manages the Star Wars sites. He's got his own podcast, Star Wars The Saga Continues. So Tim's awesome. Because I get all of my Arrow and Star Wars Rebels and Clone Wars news from Tim.
Yeah.
And I run those sites.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
But it's so great because he allows me to run those sites without having to do any work.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's one of my favorite people on the planet.
Yeah. Awesome things happening there.
So, quiverpodcast.com is where you can get all that stuff. You can leave comments on news stories as well as episodes.
And we know that people do like commenting on things because of the Facebook group that people have totally joined, and it's become such a powerhouse. I'm so excited.
It hit a critical mass at a certain point where there was enough people and it was active enough that I guess we got put on a bunch of lists in relation to Arrow.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So people are just like flooding into the group.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like we've like doubled our size in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. So.
And we try to add you as quickly as possible if you want to jump on stuff like that. And it's great. Good conversations. I think people have some pretty good ways of talking about episodes sometimes immediately when they happen, a couple days after. People post photos and news and just have general conversations. Some of the best things that are happening on there are just people talking about the DC universe or about...
Well, it's a community, right? Yeah. We're not always talking about Arrow, but we're always talking about something that the Arrow community...
would enjoy.
...might be interested in, right? So some of us have different interests than others, but more often than not, if you like Arrow, you're probably going to be down for some Captain America Winter Soldier, stuff like that, right? So those conversations also happen, which is really cool. So that facebook.com/quiverpodcast is how you get to our Facebook page, and from there you can find links to the group. And apparently if you just search for an Arrow group on Facebook, we pop up. So
just search for Quiver and most of our stuff will come up. And then how can you tweet us, Mike?
At quiverpodcast is our Twitter account,
which I love. I'm gonna try to maybe do some more tweeting from that. But it's good. Cool. There's some good... I think the new stuff comes out on our Twitter as well, which is nice.
Yes. Yeah, everything gets posted to Twitter automatically.
Yeah, which is great. And you can also follow me and Mike on our own social media. I'm at Akonkin, A-K-O-N-K-I-N.
And I'm at Arkwulf, A-R-K-W-U-L-F.
And we can keep the conversation going there.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, I'm always looking for more followers on the Twitter.
Yeah. And something that I always like to do at the end of each season, you know, having a full season already under our belt for Quiver, but one thing that we talked about a lot in our last couple seasons were what people could do over the summer, and we got people watching Smallville and some other shows. So if you have recommendations, I think near the end of Quiver, we're going to get people, you know, going on more sci-fi over the summer so that they don't feel so lost without Arrow. Send us recommendations. We always talk about shows that we really like, but if you have particular sci-fi things that you feel other people in the Arrow community would enjoy, send us that. I think we'll maybe do a little bit of that at the end of once Quiver's all done, so that people can do some awesome more watching over the summer and enjoy some other shows.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm stoked people like Leanne jumping on Netflix and catching up with certain shows, and Netflix making it really accessible for a lot of stuff right now, which is great.
Yeah, hopefully season 2 shows up pretty quick so that people who are behind can check that out. Yeah. But I think that does it for us this week. Thank you guys for listening. Yeah. We'll catch you next week for Seeing Red.
Seeing Red. Stay sharp, everyone. pointed out on the Facebook group that you're always very condescending to me, and I was like, you know what? It's true.
Who pointed that out?
I don't know. Someone on one of the, I liked the post. I don't remember what it was. Oh, it was something about the end comments, and they were like, Mike often talks to Amanda in a condescending tone. And I was like, truth. There's truth.
That's because a lot of the time I'm condescending to you. You like to state the obvious a lot, or ask questions that you should already have answers to. Things like that.
You think I should have the answers to?
No. I'm talking about questions that you've already asked and I've given you answers to. And then I'm giving you the answers again. So, yeah, it sounds condescending.
Because I don't remember.
Yeah, that's... Yes, and so I'm condescending to you because you don't remember the answer that I gave you. If somebody was constantly looking at a shape that has three sides and three points and going, man, I wish there was a name for that thing. I just, like, I see them all over the place. They're really important. But no one's ever named it before? Would you not be like, that's a triangle, buddy. That's a triangle. Right? Yes. So... It's an extreme example, but I think it illustrates my point.
It's okay, I'm condescending a lot of the time. I was stoked for Captain America. We all went as a group for Tuesday. And it was pretty epic. But like...
I'm glad I don't go to movies on Tuesdays.
Why?
I'm just joking.
That was an unnecessary burn.
I just can't imagine what your crew, what your Tuesday night crew is like at a movie theater.
We were awesome. It was good. We had a whole row. It was good. We got to talk about stuff.
During the movie. That's what I'm saying. No. This is the point that I'm trying to make.
No.
Is
mostly
that...
after.
Mostly
no,
after.
I'm the only one that like talks during movies.
Oh, I know. I know that you talk during movies, Amanda. And TV shows.
Yeah, it's really bothering people at Game of Thrones, actually, because I keep having to yell at the television, and then people are like, mad at me. But like, I don't even need an answer. I just want to like... know what's happening.
I'm gonna condescend to you for 1 second if I may. The reason why people get mad at that is because you have no self-control. You have no ability to limit yourself and say, I don't need to say this out loud. And
yeah,
where some of us are
thinking,
spoilers, by the way, for anybody who hasn't watched Game of Thrones yet, you just skip ahead 30 seconds. Seconds. Oh my god, they just killed Joffrey. Okay, you were warned. If you listen to that and now you're spoiled, that's your own fault. I can't do anything for you. But if that happens, or a similar shocking thing on Game of Thrones, yeah, we're all thinking, oh my god, that's crazy and shocking. But you're the only person that's like, wait. No. Did they just... I can't believe it. Are you serious? Are you kidding me? How could they do that? I can't believe they just did that. Did they seriously just do that?
I don't go on that long, but I'll say like one or two things.
Again, I'm exaggerating for effect. It's called hyperbole. I would think somebody who has a degree in theater would understand poetic license, but that's okay.
Whatever. I like am a terrible person. I keep like thinking outside of myself... Like,
good. Thank God. Now I'm going to have to bleep that if I put this in. But thank God you're thinking outside of yourself. Thank God you're seeing yourself from other people's perspectives. That's what a well-rounded human being does.
I'm not very good at it. I've just started to try.
I know. Oh, trust me. I know that you've just started. Amanda, you are one of my favorite people, okay? And we've been friends for a very long time. But you are very, very, very inward-looking. Inward-facing as a human being. It's very much, I really like this hot chocolate. I'm going to tell everybody how much I like this hot chocolate. People are having a conversation about something else. They don't need to know about my hot chocolate experience. But I really need to express how I feel about this hot chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's who you are, and people like that about you. But it can be a lot sometimes, especially when the situation doesn't necessarily call for it.
Man, I...
Which one of these emails do you want to read? Do you want to read the really short one, the kind of short one, or the two-pager?
Oh my gosh.
I'll read the two-pager.
Yeah, you read the two-pager. I'm going to read the two shorter ones.
Okay.
Man, oh, this is fancy paper.
That was an accident. Oh. It was in the printer from Apex of Destiny.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, this is very expensive paper. Cool.
That depends on what your definition of expensive is, but
anything that's not regular. I don't know.
Instead of being $7 a ream, it's $8 a ream. But
yeah,
whatever.
I know. I don't know.
Sorry, was that condescending?
No, I just had to self-censor myself because I was going to tell you something that you didn't care about, and I was like, Amanda, reflect upon whether or not Mike wants to kiss. I just, like, don't That's feel awesome. As though... See, this is what it is. I don't feel as though what I say has any effect on other people, so therefore, like, me expressing myself is the only thing I possibly can do, because I care about how good this hot chocolate is, and so I'm just going to say how good this hot chocolate
is. But the conceit of that, the premise of it, of that whole statement that you just made, is that you don't think that what you say affects other people.
Yeah.
Right? And the way you said it, I realized, was in the thing of, like, nobody's listening to me.
Yeah.
Right? But where that is absolutely true, a lot of the time, a lot of us have learned to just tune you out when you just kind of start talking about things. The other side of that is that sometimes you talk and you don't really consider that it's affecting other people, right? I'll go back to our conversation about that never made it onto a podcast about women in comics and how that, like, what you said was hurtful. It was hurtful to me and it was hurtful to my friends because you painted comic book store owners and comic book store goers with a very broad brush. You did. And you may not have meant it, but you said it. And this is what I'm saying. Like, this is where it works on both sides, where you are just having diarrhea of the mouth and it's coming out. But what you said was really inflammatory. And it's not what you meant.
Yeah.
You don't remember that conversation.
I do, but inflammatory?
Yeah,
I was, like, excited about, like, a realization about, like, gender dynamics in comics based on that Reddit thread I had read during the day and had this, like, revelation as to why things are marketed certain ways.
But what you said, to paraphrase what you said, because I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was essentially that comic book stores are a patriarchal, like, you went feminist on it and you made it sound like No, you didn't say that. I'm paraphrasing. Oh, yeah, that's what I said. You made it sound like comic book store owners and people in comic book stores don't want girls there.
Oh!
There's a reason why girl comics don't happen.
What I said, because I remember, and I was talking about the comment about the... I don't know, whoever the, like, writer was for the Miss Marvel or whatever, and the thing, because I showed you the thing, and what I meant was what she had said in it was the idea that, like, comic book stores have been structured and comics are marketed because the conceit is that comic book stores are frequented by men much more often than they are women. So therefore, the people that are going to buy the stuff in the comic book store are the men that are there. So therefore, comic book stores...
But then you went on to say that you don't go to comic book stores because you don't belong in comic book stores. Like, that was essentially what you went on to say off of that. Like, you started at that point. I agree. Yeah. Like, you were talking about that thread and about that, what that person had said. And then you went on to say that you don't buy comic books and you don't go to comic book stores because comic book stores are chauvinistic or misogynistic.
I personally don't go into comic book stores, but it didn't mean that it was because of the patriarchal, like, structure I was talking about.
Okay, but this is what I'm trying to tell you, is that although that's not what you meant or how you felt, that is what you said. Right? Like, that, no, it is, because you said it. You said it, but people aren't in your brain, and this is the thing. This is why I say it's good that you're seeing yourself from other people's perspectives, or that you're at least trying. That's a good thing, because it means that you're becoming cognizant that the things that you say affect other people, whether you think they do or not, whether you want them to or not, they're going to, right? And so when you say something that, because I remember exactly the feeling of, like, what you said was painting me and my friends with the very broad brush that as comic book fans, we don't want girls in our comic book stores. Like, it's
That's not what I said, though.
Okay, I do have it recorded, and and we could go back and listen to it. Okay. And I could pinpoint the sentence because...
But then we had a conversation about it, right? And then you understood what I actually meant.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, like that aspect of your personality that doesn't think that what's coming out of your mouth is directly affecting things, that it goes both ways.
Dude, that happened to me on Tuesday. I totally said something, and then, like, Andrew took it completely the wrong way, and I just today, on my way home, was like, oh, that's why he was so offended by that. And it was like it's a thing that, like, I was like, but that's not all I was talking, I wasn't talking about your own,
have,
like,
you apologized to him yet?
No, I should, I'll do that when I go home. I'll be like, so that's the other side of
it. That's the other side of it. And that's the part of it that makes, that takes it from inward facing into selfish territory. Well, right? Because when you think, oh, I should apologize, and then you go about your day.
But the thing is that
more than likely it's sitting with him.
I want to have, but this is why if something offends someone right away, we need to have a conversation and deconstruct why it actually offended you.
Yeah, there's a reason why diplomacy doesn't always work, though. So your theoretical approach to diplomacy, because that's what you're talking about, like, let's talk this out and let's come to a consensus. You're not always going to come to a consensus, first of all. You're very rarely going to come to a consensus, because unless two people start in a position of agreement, they are not likely to end in a position of agreement.
But you should be happy with your specific argument at the end and be like, yes, I am very adamant at this. No,
because human nature dictates that one argument wins over the other. Even if everybody walks away going, wow, that sure was a lively debate, a bunch of people are walking away from that within their heads, I won that debate, or I lost that debate, right? It's human nature. We work in dichotomies, okay, well, and we work in absolutes.
I never, ever, ever will let myself walk away from a debate feeling like I lost it.
No, yes, absolutely. I don't disagree with you whatsoever.
Problem.
We're not going to have a debate about this because we started in a position of agreement. I agree with you that you don't think that you've ever lost an argument. You walk away from every argument either going, wow, I'm glad I convinced that person, or, man, that person's an idiot for not agreeing with me. Those are your two options, right? And every once in a while, it's humbling to walk away from a situation and go, wow, I was really, really wrong in that instance.
Why would I live my life arguing about stuff I think is wrong, ever? With adamant conviction.
Okay, but sometimes, this is the thing, is that position and that getting used to that, you're not humbling yourself in doing that. You're not being open, right? I would say that is actually a very similar position to a lot of creationists who are going to go into an argument thinking, well, I know that the earth is only 6,000 years old. I know that Jesus rode around on a dinosaur. I know, well, not Jesus, but Adam and Eve rode around on dinosaurs. What? I know
that
fossils exist because Satan put them there to trick people, okay? There are people that believe that, for better or worse, however they feel about that, and I'm not judging them except for the fact that I think that they're horribly wrong. But that's my opinion, right? I mean, opinion based on fact and science. But whatever, right? Like, that person is going into an argument with the intent of stating their personal truth, right? Yes. I've had a lot of conversations with Victor about this, and he just doesn't seem to understand what I'm saying. And I think it's because the crux of my argument always goes back to Indiana Jones. In the third Indiana Jones movie, the beginning of the movie, he's a kid, and then he's on the boat with the Cross of Coronado that he finally recovers. And after that, he's back at the university, and he's teaching a class. And in that class, he's teaching this class about they uncovered a tomb, and they were looking for a body of some famous knight or king or prince or something like that. And popular folklore and local legend said that it was in X, but it wasn't true. Like, that, there's no fact to back that up. That was just folklore and legend. And it turns out that the person was buried in a completely different place at a completely different time, mm-hmm. and all of the written truth, the things that people thought were true, mm-hmm. were not true. So there's a difference between truth and fact, right?
Oh, cool. Oh, that's like an idea, like an awesome, like...
Yeah, well, but yeah. There's a reason why they're separate words, right? Like, yeah. people always get mad at me personally when I'm in an argument, and I say, no, you're using the wrong word. And then they go, well, you know what I mean. And I know I don't know what you mean, because you just used a word that describes something different from what you're saying. Mm-hmm. There's a word for what you're saying, and it's your job to know what that word is. So, fact and truth, different things. People think that they're the same thing, but they're not. Like, fact is fact. Like, that's a table that I just knocked with my hand. That's a fact. You know how I know it's a fact? I can replicate it. I think that tomato sauce with Italian sausage in it is delicious. Can I replicate that? Sometimes. A lot of people are going to agree with me, but you walked into my house going, what is that smell? It smells like meat. I don't like meat. Right? So that's a truth for me. Like, there is nothing wrong or false about the fact that I think and feel and know that tomato sauce with Italian sausage is delicious. It's a delicious thing. That doesn't make it a fact, though, right? Like,
interesting.
There's a big difference there. So then that is the key, I think, in debate. And we just had a very a dramatic debate about Aquaman versus John Carter.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we walked away from that feeling like we were morally victorious.
Yes.
If not, you know, factorally virtuous as well.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that we lost the debate. We lost the debate for a variety of different reasons, and when it eventually ever, if it does come out as a podcast, our listeners can let us know what they thought.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, at the end of the day, the other team won the debate because they had more friends there, right? So, like, they played to their audience, yeah. And, I mean, we were doomed from the beginning, just like I had said.
Like, but, I guess, like, the thing is, though, yeah, it's just, like, that though doesn't bother me. Like, that is kind of like me going like, all right, well, you guys, I guess, I don't know. Because then I'm like, John Carter.
Yeah, but that is you letting your ego control.
Maybe.
Right? Like, letting your ego take the steering wheel and say, well, we were right. I know we were right because it was us. So, of course, we were right. I was on that team. Right? And that's all ego. There's no humbleness in that whatsoever. Like I'm. It's a bad example because we were right. We did have the facts. We did have the arguments. But it's also humbling to say, you know, but we lost the game, right? We may have had the better fundamentals.
Yeah.
But I'm going into a sports analogy, so it's going to be lost on you. Like, we have the better fundamentals, so theoretically, on paper, we should have won.
Yeah.
But they won the game. And the game is bring your friends. The game is bring people with you. This is why I don't
like sports. Because then it's just like the score and then that's cool and whatever. And whoever like played the game better doesn't necessarily win. But in rhetoric, it's less like defined. Because rhetoric, you can, even if you lose 10, like even if you lose whatever, right, like 99 of 100 people, if you convince one person, then you can still call that like a victory in itself. I guess that's why I love rhetoric. You can convince
yourself, but this is where this is going that makes it a very dangerous behavior.
Yeah, it is dangerous.
You're not only convincing the other person, but you're fully convincing yourself.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, you have to wake up and realize that your ego is running the show.
Yeah.
And it's totally got your id by the short and curlies. And is dictating how you feel about things, right? You
know what's an interesting thing, though? I know that if people describe me, like, there's certain words that people would never use to describe me. Mm-hmm. And I know that humble is not one of them.
Yeah.
But I'm very proud of the other words that, because I'm not humble, that people would use to describe
me. Pride is the opposite of being humble, right? Of
I think stubborn is what I am. I'm not proud. I'm stubborn.
Hey, but you it's just used the word proud.
I'm not proud. I'm stubborn.
Okay.
That's what I said. I'm not.
Yeah, I know, but you just used the word proud anyways.
What did I say?
You said that you're proud of the things that people do say about you.
Yes.
The words that people
But I don't
use.
Think they would call me proud. I was using the word in two different ways.
I know. I'm calling you proud.
As a verb and
Amanda, right now, I'm calling you proud. Sure. I think that you are very proud, and I think that that pride gets in the way of a lot of your talent and a lot of your ability. Because I do think that your ego, and this is coming from another egomaniac, right? Like that your ego gets in the way of you doing a better job than you do. So I would say that Blank Verse, as great as an accomplishment as it is not as good as it could have been. Right? And yes, there's a learning curve, but at the same time, I think that there were compromises in the wrong areas, and I think that there were poor decisions made that sort of put it on the path that it was on. Right? And there are aspects of it that are great, but there are a lot of aspects of it that fall
Have you watched
short.
Ben's vlog? Because it's epic.
No, I haven't watched Ben's
vlog. Ben's vlog is like what I meant to do a year ago, mm-hmm. and it's so strong because it is so contained in like a different way. I also had much
I haven't watched it yet. And to be honest, I haven't finished watching Blank Verse. I think I've watched like the first two acts or whatever.
Okay,
like
well,
I haven't followed
those are the
through.
Ones that we were trying to figure out.
Yeah.
4 and 5 are the better ones.
But I think if the things that bother me are not things that you would have fixed, right? Like they're decisions and choices that you made that were initial choices that would then carry throughout, right?
Like
casting choices. I don't want to single people out. I don't want
like other stuff,
right. But there were quality choices from the outset that determined how good it could be. You know what I mean? And for you, because you were so inside it, and this is the problem that all filmmakers get into sooner or later, but you were so inside it and you were so busy with it, and I feel like this is probably your biggest fault, is that you get so busy with things that you don't care about how good the product is, you just care that you're producing, right? And that to me, like, If I found that doing this podcast and doing Rebels and doing my webcomic and doing Eight Bits of Destiny and anything else that I might pick up along the way was causing one or more of those things to fail, then I would at least sit down and consider which of these things am I going to drop, right? And I do that on a regular basis. Like, you have to audit yourself all the time and say, I have all of these irons in the fire. Nobody gives a crap about this one, right? This one annoys people, right? Like, I used to curate two other Tumblr blogs. I had Star Wars Daily, and I was doing an 8 Bits of Destiny one. And they weren't gaining followers. Nobody really cared. So at a certain point, I was like, you know what? You know what this means? This means there's no Star Wars and there's no video games on my Tumblr.
Oh,
and at a certain point, I went, screw those. They're not doing anything for me. I dropped them. I still have them. Like, they're
still
there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't ever post anything to them anymore because they were a detriment to my Tumblr.
Yeah.
And that's why I was on Tumblr, not for these other things. Like, you're on Tumblr to do Blank Verse stuff and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'm on Tumblr to be on Tumblr, right?
Yeah.
I go on Twitter to do the same thing that you go on Blank.
And I go on Twitter
Tumblr,
just to, like, engage
right?
and have fun.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know. Like, I think that you, at a certain point, need to step back, audit, and go, I'm doing too many things, or I'm spreading myself too thin, or the opposite, I'm delegating too many tasks and I'm handing them over to other people, and those other people aren't coming through. Those other people aren't doing as good of a job as they could be. And I think your biggest problem with Blank Verse is that you have so many friends on it that if they're good or they're bad, you don't have the ability as a producer to administrate, right?
That's again.
You can't say to somebody, hey, you're doing a piss poor job, crank it up, because right now you're at 6 and I need you at least 8, Right.
And see, this is the thing. This happened with Ben's vlog has been consistently like really solid. And then episode 7, there was sound problems, and it's Ryan that's editing it. But I made him. He was like, well, I'm going to like New Orleans, and that means I can't do episode 9. I'm like, nope. There's ways that we are going to figure this out.
Yeah.
And it wound up working perfectly at episode 7 and 8, like, and it got redone, and it was, like, a line. And it's, like, we have this really precarious relationship because we work so... He's my best friend while also being, like, my best, like, coworker. Like, we work so in tandem with stuff, and so it's becoming better. Like, that was such a learning curve. I really like that you use blame first as a thing that you, like, talk about, that's something that's, like, I've, like, put a lot of time and energy and done well, because right now I'm like, oh, God, blame first. I did not do at all what I meant to at that point.
Well, I mean, so it's, like, interesting. When I... This is the thing, is that I think the as you set out to do it, it is an accomplishment, right? Yeah. Like, it is something that you can say, like, look at this.
We and it's
it,
cool, yeah.
We did
like,
it from
cool.
start
we
to
it,
finish.
Yeah, yeah.
I think like, as a product, separate from my friends that are in it and made it, I would never watch it, right? Like, and I just wouldn't. And that's just me being honest. And you can be honest with me. You'd never listen to any of my Star Wars podcasts. And that's cool. It's not really... No, I know, but it's not your thing. And although, like, I love Shakespeare, I love Shakespeare. I don't love Elizabethan theater, right? I love Shakespeare specifically.
Yeah.
Right? I love his specific sense of humor and his wit. And it, because one of the arguments that you get into with people who don't know Shakespeare but think that they know Shakespeare, they go, oh, well, you know that Romeo and Juliet is actually a play that some other guy did and he just ripped it off. Oh. Or, like it's okay. Because he did. He recycled a whole bunch of other stories from other people. Mm-hmm. But it's not about the fact that his plots were the most original plots. It's that his characters were so fleshed out and interpreted so well, and however many hundred years later, are still as vibrant on the page as they were then, right? And even though culturally they mean different things, right? And the humor is still there, and when you can dig a little bit deeper and understand the language a little bit better... The humor is so good, right?
Yeah.
But I don't care about Ben Johnson, and I don't care about all of your other characters.
Yeah. Dude, do me a favor then. If you're not going to watch other stuff, just go watch the Thanksgiving episode. That's the only episode Act 4 as its whole is really solid, and it's sort of where it starts to get solid, but if you don't watch anything else, go watch, like, the Thanksgiving episode, because I'm really proud of that one. Like, it's really solid, and a little longer, and it had so many of its own problems, but as a thing. Oh my gosh, my brain. I was just gonna say something else. Now I have to pee again. I ate the whole hock of chocolate, and we've been sitting here talking.
The whole hock of chocolate.
Anyways, thank you. This is good. This is informative about my brain. It was good. I need to start being more freaking introspective. I think I need to start meditating or something.